You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
With Gable, hands it to him. CJ Gable scores. Touchdown, Ticats. Now the Argos looking to land the next punch. Flags on the field. Touchdown, Ticats. Big toss here. Brandon Banks is going to score. Touchdown, Ticats. Suddenly, momentum here in the Hammer.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. Some good, some bad, some ugly, and I think the best place to start off is with the ugly. Let's get that out of the way so we can get to the good stuff, the happy stuff. But we got to talk about, unfortunately, again, Art Briles. The second week in a row, we're gonna talk about him. Last week, we did a separate show talking about the Briles controversy and the hiring and all that, and we put it out there. And then about 10 seconds after that happened, word came down that the CFL and the Ticats had agreed to not allow Briles to become a coach with the Ticats, which I think we all can agree was the right call, should have been the call to begin with. I remember when it happened, you and I started texting back and forth, kind of breathing a sigh of relief that, okay, it's not so bad. We just had that really, I thought, was really cathartic talk. You and I sat for about a half an hour and recorded our conversation about this whole thing, and It felt good to get that off my chest. And when you saw this happen, I felt like a weight was kind of lifted. Like it's not so bad now, and we're going to be okay. Is that sort of where you were as well after you heard the news that he wasn't coming on board?
Yeah, there's still the question of, you know, they were forced really to undo this hiring, and that's kind of unfortunate and a little bit disappointing. But overall, just the fact that he won't be on this team makes me feel a lot better going forward. You know, makes me have more pride in the team. I don't feel embarrassed to wear the Ticats gear out anymore. So I'm just glad that however it happened, I'm just glad that it did happen.
Yeah, and like it felt good. And it's like I went to bed resting easy going, okay, this is going to take a while to get over, but eventually we're going to get past this. And okay, it's done with. And then the half-hearted apologies started coming out. Scott Mitchell was on the radio, and it was bad, the things he was saying. It was a mirror of what he had said. We talked about it because he had done the interview with Drew for Three Down Nation, and that came out, and we both agreed, like, that was just not good. And he kind of doubled down on that, and that, again, I'm listening to this and reading recaps of it going, oh, this does not look good. Then Bob Young sent out an apology to, I don't know if it went out to all Ticats fans or just season ticket holders, but there was a statement that was released, and I think it was released to the general public, and it was not good. It felt like empty words. Like it was just a really short sort of, we shouldn't have done this, we're sorry. He did issue a second statement later on, but it's kind of like you can't unring the bell. You don't get a chance, second chance to make a first impression. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like in the immediate aftermath of this, you could tell that this decision was forced on them by the league, and just the Ticats failed, in my opinion, in every way possible with their initial comments after the decision came down. It still felt gross to me after all this happened. Same with you?
Yeah, it's like, oh, we took it back because the media and the fans overreacted kind of thing. That's how I felt he was saying what I felt he was saying. And you know, I guess they thought they had some inside information about Briles and they had a letter from Baylor or something, but it's like they did something wrong and they're just kind of, you know, pretending to apologize and they didn't really regret the decision necessarily until, you know, there was all that uproar. But it just seems a little insincere, the apologies.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the letter. That was the next thing I want to touch on. This letter emerged that was apparently what gave the Ticats this idea that they could hire him and that it would be okay. But I'm sure you probably read the letter. I'm sure everyone who's listening to this has read the letter. I read the letter. It was posted all over the place. And you can clearly read this and go, this doesn't exonerate him of anything. This is lawyer speak. This is still kind of a gross thing to just, like, you, not that he did no wrong, but that it's like these certain charges that you're being, that people are saying to you aren't true. But it's like, okay, so you didn't do these couple of things, but that still leads a whole host of other things that you did. Like, it just, the whole thing was unseemly, gross, disgusting. Like, just, we talked about it last week, just talking about it made us feel icky. And personally, I'm just glad this whole thing is over. I think the game on Monday, even if they would have lost, like, I just think having a football game and just being able to get back to watching football and talking about the stuff on the field, I think that's started kind of helping with the healing a little bit. Like, the Ticats did themselves no favors earlier in the week, and then as we got closer to the game, you could kind of feel people were still angry. And, like, I wrote a piece for 3Down saying, you know, the fans, they don't have to forgive, they don't have to forget, they shouldn't. It's going to take a long time for this stink to come off the Ticats, but it's nice to get back to football. And I think Monday's game was it was sort of the capper to a crappy week, and now we're kind of all moving forward. But before we get off this and start talking about something else, I want to give a shout out to a couple of fans. I think people know them. Ticat fans on Twitter will know them. Laura and Tina, they both set up this thing where each of them made ribbons in the colors that I believe are for supporting survivors of sexual assault, and they handed them out, and there was some media attention given to them. And I think that was a great thing, sort of a way to show, yeah, you're still a Ticat fan, but this, you're still disgusted by this. And I thought it was a perfect way to sort of end this whole unseemly scenario in a positive manner. And now we have a football game to talk about. And I just feel like we can kind of close the book on this and then never speak of him again.
Yeah, there is a huge mistake on their part. And I'm just, you know, looking forward to moving on and not thinking about it and not talking about it anymore, because it was probably the worst week I've ever had being a Ticats fan, you know, being embarrassed to be a Ticats fan. I hate that. I want to be proud to be a Ticats fan. And, you know, it was tough this year with the record, but that stuff was just too much to handle, really. So it's over. We got a win, and we can finally move on.
And that's just it. Move on we shall. Let's talk about the game. Mike, the Ticats are oh no mo. Yes, that was a terrible thing. I never should have said that. But anyway, we're talking about a win, Mike, for the first time since last October. It's been almost, I think it was late October they won, so it's been about 10 months since you and I have done a show where we get to talk about a Hamilton Tiger Cats win. The monkey is off the back. Owen has left the building. Say hello to Juan. The Ticats finally got in the win column with what I think we can best describe as a bit of an ugly 24-22 victory in the Labor Day Classic over the Toronto Argonauts. It was nice to get out of here with a victory, but boy, oh boy, does this team not make it easy on us or themselves, do they? How was the heart after the maybe the last, 45 or so seconds of that game, just taking penalties to extend the game, and it was already too late to begin with because of the rain delay. It's just, holy smokes. It's, how many times that game had more endings than the bloody Lord of the Rings, and I thought we were finally done. Nope, game's still going on. Nope, game's, it's like, oh, just why are you doing this to us?
Yeah, it was similar to the Edmonton-Hamilton game in Edmonton where there was a roughing the passer call, I think, and there was no time left on the clock. They got another play and another play. But yeah, it was definitely nerve-wracking, and I honestly thought that they were going to tie the game and they would find another way to lose, and that didn't happen. We got lucky. Haralahu missed that kick, and 24-22 for the Ticats to get their first win, and I couldn't be happier about it.
But even after the kick, like I was saying, when the Ticats scored the touchdown, the CJ Gable touchdown to take the lead 24-21, I turned to the three friends of mine that I go to the games with, and I'm just like, there was 2-ish minutes left. I'm like, the Argos are going to drive down. They're going to kick a field goal. We're going overtime. We're going to have to sit through more. We're not going to get out of the stadium until after midnight.
Right.
And the Argos drive, and they miss the field goal. And it's like, okay, 45 seconds left. They can kneel this out. And I'm saying this, they can kneel it out. They can kneel it out. And two of the three are like, you shut your mouth. This is the Ticats we're talking about. It's not over until it's over. They take the first knee. There's a bit of a kerfuffle. And then all of a sudden a flag is thrown, and it's on the bloody Tie Cats, which means the clock stops, which means now they can't kneel it out, which means now we have they're going to have to run a play and get a first down, which they don't. So then they got to punt the ball. They punt the ball with about, I want to say, 10 to 12 seconds left. Argos return it. He gets tackled. No time left on the clock. Game's over. Oh, except there's another penalty. And, oh, there's supposed to be 2 seconds left on the clock. And it's like, is this thing ever going to bloody end? And then I'm thinking, okay, so they're going to throw up a Hail Mary. There's going to be a pass interference call. And they're going to kick a field goal. And they're going to win this game 25-24. Like, it's like how that you were kneeling out the game to win it with 45 seconds left. And now we're going to a last play. But luckily, it all ended the way it should have. And the Tie Cats escaped with a victory. But, oh, it was just – I'm just watching this going, this team is trying – are they trying to lose this game?
I know, like 45 seconds left on the clock. All you have to do is kneel it, and somehow they messed that up. It was, yeah, it was a bit of a blunder, but, you know, they can't be making those mistakes going forward if they want to put together some wins, you know. It's just, yeah, it was very, very nerve-wracking, even when they got the ball with 12 seconds left. You never know what's going to happen.
No, not at all. But before we get into some more specifics, I think we got to talk about the weather delay. Over 2 hours. It didn't feel that long to me as I was there, but it, looking back, I think it's officially recorded as a 128 minute weather delay. So that's long. That's a long time to wait for a game. The crowd obviously thinned out immensely following that. There were maybe a few thousand people left in the stands when the game resumed. But two good things did come out of the delay for me personally, and for Ticat fans in general. First, the Ticats are offering 2 free tickets to a future game this season to anyone who bought tickets to the Labor Day Classic, which I think is a really cool gesture. I think it's a great PR move after the bad week they had last week. I think it's a great way to sort of thank the fans and you stuck around, you stuck with us. Here's a bit of a reward. The team did not have to do this. I don't think. Weather delays happen. It's a crappy part of football, but if there's lightning in the area, you can't play the game. So I thought this was really, really cool on the Ticats part. And personally, secondly, I got to meet our new commissioner, and holy smokes, is this guy just – I was talking to Drew Edwards. He happened to come down during the delay, and I was chatting with him. I said, oh, I met the new commish, and he's like, oh, what was that like? I was like, just really cool dude, was talking to fans. Apparently he bought pizza for everyone in the press box, and just chatting about how every sort of major crisis that this league has had since he's taken over, he has found the perfect way – to sort of figure it out and fix it. And apparently he was only in Hamilton because of what happened during the week. He was in Regina for the Winnipeg Saskatchewan game on Sunday, flew in to be at this game and was there simply because he wanted to meet with the fans, talk to the fans and sort of gauge like, what can we do in the future? Like just this dude is hitting a home run every time. I got a chance to get a quick chat with him and a picture. If you go on my Twitter feed, you can find it. It just, I went up to him, just said, hey, shook his hand. Was there any chance you could take a picture with me and my friends? And he was more than happy to. He's like, how are y'all doing? We're sorry for the delay. We're trying to get this thing back up. Like just, I don't know if I've ever met someone in a position like this that was just so cool and confident and just personable. Like it was a really, really cool meeting. And he seems like a guy who's going to be very accessible to fans. So Mike, if you ever go to an Eskimos game and you know that he's there, try to find him and check him out and get a handshake and a picture with him. Cause you're going to find that he's a really cool dude.
Well, I don't know if I'll check him out, but I will have a good conversation. No, but yeah, you see, you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Mark Cohan, you know, being friendly with the fans and all that stuff. But he has that football background. You know, he's for me right now, he's the perfect man for the job, and I hope he has the job for many, many years to come, because this guy is the real deal. He's down to earth, but he knows what he's doing. So, yeah, it must have been a great pleasure to meet him, because he's one of the best commissioners we've had in a while, since Mark Cohan, at least.
Yeah, and he's so genuine. And it seems like all this is so effortless to him. Like, I can't think of a more perfect person to be in this position. Like, you look at him and you feel like he believes what he's saying, believes in what he's doing. And I hope that the Board of Governors trust him with a mandate. Like, he hasn't really had a chance to do anything. He's only been on the job, what, 3 months or so now? But he hasn't really had a chance to sort of put his mark on the league. I'm curious to see what happens in the offseason. Just everything that he's done so far, just A-plus all around, and very, very, very impressive. So, Mike, I do hope you get a chance to check him out at a later date, because, like I said, I think you'll be rather impressed with just the way he is. He's just really cool, really cool. Okay, so personal stuff aside, let's talk about this game. Let's get into some offensive talk. Not a real great game from the offense. Like, yeah, they scored 24 points. One of those touchdowns came on special teams. I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about here. I think this game was, and I think our conversation will be, dominated by the defense. I think that's where this comes through. But there's obviously a couple things we have to start about. First and foremost, we have to talk about Jeremiah Mazzoli. When we recorded the show last week, the decision hadn't been made that he was a starter, but he started the game. Kind of a ho-hum outing from him, don't you think? 19 of 33 for 213 yards, touchdown, an interception, 11 rushing yards on 2 carries. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And you kind of saw the same player that he always is. Brilliant one play, terrible the next. Like, he has a touchdown pass to Brandon Banks. That was awesome. And then the interception he threw was awful. The sack he took at the end of the first half was awful. And it's just that's sort of the player Jeremiah Mazzoli is. So what did you think about his first outing as the team's anointed starter in 2017?
Yeah, like you said, very inconsistent. It's always been the knock on him. He can be brilliant and he can be terrible. The interception was bad. There was a short, like, little swing pass that should have been completed in the game at one point to Gable, and it was just an overthrown ball. Gable had no chance of catching it. But, you know, the numbers aren't great, but we got the win, and it just seems, you know, we haven't had a win in so long. It just seems like, oh, he must have played awesome, but he really didn't. You know, 57.6% passing the ball is not great, but he had a couple big plays, a couple big passes that, you know, looking back on it, you go, oh, it wasn't that bad, you know? So, and it seemed like they were running the ball more, but they really weren't. C.J. Gable only had 6 carries for 43 yards. I guess it maybe seemed that way because when he did touch the ball, he ripped off, you know, usually a 10-yard-plus run, so... I really liked the way that C.J. Gable ran the ball, even though he only had 6 touches.
Yeah, 7.2 yards per carry average. He had a long of 15. One of the runs he had was a 1-yard touchdown run, so he basically had 5 carries for 42 yards. Like, that's a hell of an average for a running back. And you're right, it did feel like they were mixing up a little bit more, but they didn't. They only ran the ball a total of 10 times, which is, like, that's not that much. Like, maybe it is kind of is for the Ticats, but it felt like they just did more with the run. And, like, you did mention Gable. I was really happy that he had a good game. Seeing Mercer Timmis back there getting a couple carries, didn't do much with him, only 3 yards on 2 carries. And he did a bit in the return game, and then unfortunately he got hurt. And it looks like, from what people were watching on TV, you can probably vote for this. It looks like it could be a broken leg or a broken ankle. Probably not coming back anytime this year, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, his leg bent the way it's not supposed to bend. It looked pretty ugly on the replays. So, yeah, it sucks. He seems like a talented guy, and maybe he could be a future starter for this team, but I'm expecting him to be out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and that's another thing out of this game, injury-wise. This team got hit hard with injuries, especially Canadian players. We saw Justin Vaughn go down. He came back in the game, so that's good. But Timmis went out. Giovanni Aprile got hurt on the very first play of the game, the opening kickoff. He didn't come back. This team's already missing Mike Daly and Nick Shortle and Evan Gill and Ted Laurent and Michael Atkinson. This team is already woefully depleted when it comes to Canadian players. So to see two more guys who were getting more playing time than normally would, Timmis was in on the offense. Like, he did only have 2 carries, but he was on. I didn't count how many offensive plays he was in there for, but he was in there quite a bit. So to lose guys that are getting significant playing time, especially that are Canadian, with they already have all these Canadians on the injured list, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, and switching to a receiver that I wasn't overly impressed with again, Mike Jones dropped a couple passes again. I hate to, you know, rip on the guy week after week, but this guy is not performing the way he should, it seems.
No, it seems like once he started getting the case of the dropsies, it's kind of messed with his confidence. He had a couple hit him right in the hands that he had and then got hit and dropped him. And as much as we were praising him earlier in the season, we kind of got to be hard on him now because he hasn't been good for the last few weeks. And it's unfortunate because it looked like he was developing into a possible future starter who you could rely on player. And he sort of just kind of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, it looks like he has the yips or something, you know, to use a baseball term, I believe. It's in his head. So hopefully he can get that out of his head, move on to the next game, and build some confidence. Now, another receiver who was targeted the most by far in this game was Brandon Banks. Now, what did you think about all the balls going Brandon Banks' way?
Surprising, right? Like, it's funny. I was going to ask you the same thing. Like, he led the team in targets. He led them in catches. He led them in yards. He had the beautiful 64-yard, I believe, touchdown catch. It was surprising to see Brandon Banks so involved in the offense. But then you start watching the game, and anyone who wants to go back and rewatch it, or maybe they remember from watching it the first time, wasn't used as much on special teams. He was not on kickoff duty at all. Started to make me wonder if maybe they're going to transition Banks into being more of a receiver. And they have speed guys, they have small guys, they have deep threats. I don't think there's anyone really in the league who can match Brandon Banks speed for speed when it comes to a deep threat in an offense. The touchdown catch he had, Jeremiah Mazzoli threw it up there, and Banks, it looked like it was overthrown, and Banks just ran and got it. And that's the type of speed you can see from him. Reminded me a lot of his touchdown catch in the Grey Cup a few years ago that Caleros threw, where he just threw it up there and Banks just went up and just outran everyone to the ball. And I just got to wonder, do you think maybe this is going to be what we see more of Brandon Banks? We'll see him on some specials, maybe in the punt game, but we're going to see him use a lot more on the offense. And if so, what do you think about that?
I think that we have seen the best of Brandon Banks in the return game. You know, if you're not getting production out of him in that area, then why not try something else? You know, it kind of reminds me of a Chad Owen situation. He was mostly a return guy early in his career, and then he eventually developed into a really good receiver. So he's more of a receiver than he is a returner now, in my opinion. And maybe we'll see that the same thing with Banks, because maybe this was a game that's saying, hey, we're going to give you a chance to show us what you have. As a receiver, we're going to throw you the ball a million times. Let's see what you got. And overall, I think he performed really well. I mean, there was that one drop that he should have had, should have been a first down. But after that, you know, he came into his own. So almost 100 yards in this game through the air. So, you know, hopefully we'll see him more, because he does stretch the field a lot. He still has that breakaway speed, and he can be utilized better in the receiving game, hopefully.
Yeah, and people will look at 13 targets and just 6 catches and think, oh my God, it's less than 50%. But a lot of the passes were overthrown. Even the one that he dropped was not a great pass, but it did hit him in the hands, and you should catch those. But a few that come to mind that I remember, there were a couple definitely that were thrown basically out of bounds. And it was just a bad throw by Mazzoli. Didn't get Banks in the position he could get to make the catch. But he got a lot of those like swing passes, screen pass type deals. And then, of course, the big catch. It's funny you bring up Chad Owens. I didn't think of that. And then as soon as you said it, I was like, that's actually kind of a really interesting parallel. This could be sort of the transition from Banks from special team stalwart to capable, dependable. The hands have to get a little bit better to be considered dependable, but becoming more of a receiver and less of a return man. It worked for Owens. I think he did turn into a pretty decent receiver. Also had his sort of fumbling catch troubles as well. But if we can get some of the similar production out of Brandon Banks that the Argos and the Ticats last year got out of Owens, that's not so bad for an offense to have that kind of weapon on the field.
Yeah, and maybe just you know, fits in better with June Jones's offensive schemes, and maybe Mazzoli also as well fits in better to his offense. So we're gonna see. Maybe these two guys can, you know, partially carry this team to respectability this season.
Yeah, so that's all I got on the offensive side of the ball, and I think we can move on to the defense now, because I think this is the story of the game. Mike, that defense played awesome. They really did. There were a few drives that they gave up, and obviously the end of the game when they had a chance to make a stop and they got lucky that Hirolahu missed a field goal wasn't great, but I think all in all we can give this defense high marks for a very, very good performance.
They look great. They, you know, we talk about it every week, you know, got to get pressure on the quarterback, and it's kind of a cliche and all that. And But we talked about it again with Ray, and they did that all game long. He was not comfortable back there. There was not sure how many sacks they had, but regardless how many sacks they had a ton of pressure all game long, and that was great to see. And the secondary played awesome as well.
Yeah, they beat the crap out of Ricky Ray. He took a lot of hits. They only had one sack, Adrian Tracy, but they did have six quarterback pressures, which isn't a ton when you think about it. Ricky Ray had 47 pass attempts, I believe it was. So, like, six pressures on 47 pass attempts isn't a ton of pressure, but it just felt like they were just always in his grill, and he couldn't get comfortable back there. And, yeah, the secondary, Richard Leonard, man, what more can we say about that guy?
Yeah, he's had the interception in the game. He's been our best DB all year long by a mile. And, you know, you look at the defensive backfield now, and it doesn't look so bad. You know, we got Manuel Davis back, and DeMond Washington was starting. So, you know, there's some talent out there, and hopefully they're turning a corner, and we can see some better defensive performances in the second half of the season from these guys.
Well, and think of the difference that we saw from the first week in Toronto when these two teams met to this week. That was a 32-15 Argos thrashing. It was never even as close as the score indicates. This one is a lot closer. They did give up a 100-yard receiver to SJ Green, but you can't really be mad about that. That's going to happen. But they kind of kept the Argos receivers in check. Outside of Green, the next leading receiver was Armonte Edwards with 66 yards. Like, Ricky Ray threw for 325, but it felt like a very inefficient's not the right word to use, but it didn't feel like a very big deal that he threw for that much, because we saw him shred this secondary 2.5 months ago, and it really felt like this group, which Leonard's a rookie who's playing in his first season, although he started every game this year. Yeah, we got it. Emmanuel Davis came back, and Courtney Stevens now with Craig Butler's retirement really sort of cemented in there as the starting safety. DeMond Washington, oh, how close he came to sealing that game with an interception that he probably would have returned for a touchdown. It was one of those things where it happened. I'm sure you remember it bounces like off his hands, and then SJ Green catches it out of nowhere, and you're just thinking, oh, not like this. Of course this is going to happen, and this is how, like, you know, the bounces just aren't going to go the Ticats' way. That had me, because it's like it was right there, and it was like if he would have taken, he could have taken it to the house, and it would have been game over. But this team, the secondary, starting to gel a little bit. They still don't have Abdul Kane, like. And maybe it's the post-win glow that we have here, but I feel a little bit better about every unit of this defense than I did a week ago.
Oh, yeah, same here. I mean, you can go up and down with the victories, but, you know, we saw a lot of good stuff in this game. It wasn't perfect, but we saw a lot of good stuff. Now, one play on defense that was kind of weird. Did you notice the Ellis play where
he gave up?
The crossing route, and he just kind of, like, I don't know, he didn't think the player was there. So he just, like, stopped. It was weird.
Yeah, he stopped and then kind of realized what was happening. And then he looks at the bench, started holding his hands out. I have no idea what was going on there. But I absolutely noticed it because the ball obviously went to him. And me and one of my friends at the game just kind of looked at each other like, what the hell is he doing? It was really weird.
Mm-hmm. Because when you watch the replay, it looked like he was looking right at the receiver when he caught the ball. And then he just, like, casually, like, stopped and kind of walked. You know, he was very strange. I don't know if anyone interviewed him after the game, but I'd like to hear his explanation because he was very weird.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it almost looked surreal. Like, you're watching it going, this didn't actually happen, but it did. Like, I can't explain it. I haven't seen any comments about it, but yeah, it was just a very, very strange play.
Yep, and like we talked about them getting pressure. It seemed all game long, but, you know, Agent Tracy has been sitting out for a long time. Tracy gets in, and I thought he played well. I thought the whole defensive line played well. Capicotti was out there doing his thing, and Big Teddy wasn't playing, right? So we have to look forward to him coming back and adding to the defensive line, too.
Capicotti is the guy who pretty much blew up the Argos last play of the game. They're rushing three. They're sitting nine back because the Argos got to throw a Hail Mary to win this game, and three against five, maybe even six. They might have even had a back there. And Capicotti just blows up his blocker, and Fajardo's got to run around. And he heaved up the pass, and it was bounced around, and anything could have happened. But it was pretty much game over as soon as that happened. And, man, this kid, I've fallen in love with him. Like, I really, really have. This is a guy that I hope has a long future with this team because I think I said it a week ago, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, really seems like he's started to find his game from when he was in Ottawa. And just every week, this guy, his motor does not stop. He's a Canadian John Chick. And it's as much as it sucks to see Chick go, Capocatti has earned his right to start in this team. I think he's been awesome, and he did it once again in this game.
Yeah, it's great to see him, you know, make a comeback after a down season last year. Many people probably thought that he was going to be a lifetime backup now after that bad season. But good to see him bounce back and contribute a lot to this team. He's a ratio breaker, and he's just a really solid player, Canadian-American, whatever, on that D-line.
So we can't talk about this game without talking about the big play on special teams. Just the Labor Day bounce. It went the Ticats' way. Crazy things happen on Labor Day, and the Ticats scored a touchdown on the Brandon Banks play, and then on the very next kickoff, newcomer Odiasi, I believe his name is. I'm going to butcher his first name.
Fabo Lucier.
Osagie Odiasi strips the ball, and then Faubert Lucier scoops it up, and he's in the end zone. Just it for the first time all season, it was like, hold on, Ticats score, and then they get a big special teams play and score. Like, I don't know how I'm supposed to react. How am I supposed to feel? This is new. Things are going well. That was so awesome to see.
Yep, Felix the Cat with the pickup. And
nice!
Someone said it on Twitter. I can't take credit. My stupid conscience. I should have. But yeah, it was great to see. I mean, back-to-back touchdowns within 33 seconds, I believe it was. We just haven't had those bounces this year, and it was very, very nice to see because I forget when that play happened. Was that in the second quarter?
I think it was the third because the Ticats did not score until after the delay. Right. Yeah, it was the third quarter.
But it was kind of – going back to one thing, the bad clock management at the end of the half. They could have had three there, and that kind of ruffled my feathers a little bit because I believe there was, you know, 10, 11 seconds left on the clock, and they run a play. Mazzoli gets sacked. The time runs out, and they don't get any points. And that was a missed opportunity by them that kind of made me a little bit upset.
Yeah, I wasn't too happy with that either. I kind of chalked that up, I think, to June Jones maybe not being as familiar with the clock rules, the timeout rules, and all that sorts of stuff. It was funny. Because of the delay, you almost forget that it was the end of the half. You know what I mean? Like, it was because there was such a long – it's like everyone's kind of not getting back into it. But, yeah, that was a missed opportunity that could have bit them in the ass. Had the Argos hit that field goal to tie it at 24, there's 3 points that instead of the Argos kicking a field goal, they're trying to score a touchdown to win the game. It's a much different ball game if the Ticats are up by six then. It didn't hurt them, but I think it's one of those things where – and I think even Jones mentioned it in the post-game thing that I saw, the Ticats post. I think he mentioned, like, I got to get better with my clock management. Like, there's things that I need to get better at. But a win's a win, and let's celebrate that, and we'll all get better. You know what I mean? Like, so I think he understands there are things that he could have done differently. But he's got to learn the game, and that's maybe part of the growing pains. And, hey, I think both believe that this season – maybe not over now, but it's the likelihood of this team making a run. Yeah, the likelihood of this team making a run is minimal. So this is more about let's figure things out and see what we have in the future. And based on game one, there's some good things to like and there's some bad things to like. And yeah, the clock management is definitely something that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, but, you know, water under the bridge because we got the win, and I'm overjoyed with that.
Yeah. Before we finish this up, though, I think we do have to talk about the refereeing, unfortunately. I was not a fan of the refereeing this game, and I say that as someone who is an ardent supporter and defender of the man who was calling the penalties. That is Mr. Andre Preux. I think he is the best referee this league has, but this was a bad, bad game from him and his crew. Some penalties, and this goes both ways. I've seen some Argo fans claim on Twitter that the only reason the Argos lost this game is the refs cost them that. That's bunk. You don't lose a game because the refs screw you. Bad things happen. Unless it's the very last play of the game, and it should have been a touchdown, and they called it, you know what I mean? Then, yeah, you have a gripe. But there were bad calls both ways, and There are some things that people are claiming were bad calls I don't think were. I think the big one to me, if you're an Argo fan you have a gripe with, is the Mazzoli fumble that was ruled an incomplete pass. What did you see at home? Did that look like a fumble to you? Because based on what I saw on the big screen at the game, that was not an incomplete pass. That was a fumble.
The thing that kind of made me a little bit confused was, yes, the arm was not going forward, like in a forward motion, but the ball did go forward. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. The ball, no matter what, the ball went forward. So is that enough then?
Maybe that is.
Because, I don't know. Does that make it an incomplete pass automatically? I don't know. It's a tough one for me. Like, if I had to choose, I probably would have said it was a fumble. But to me, it could have went either way.
Yeah, there was the Luke Tasker catch late in the game that everyone was screaming was an incomplete pass. But having had a chance to look at the replay, that doesn't hit the ground. That hits his hands. That was a good call. I saw people complain about the penalty on Rico Murray on Luke Tasker that set the Ticats up for the winning score on the one-yard line. The Ticats challenged, won the challenge on pass interference. I'm not sure what the gripe is there. That, to me, was pass interference, no?
I believe so. I think that it was a clear screening call. He didn't look back at the ball. He just kind of shielded Tasker and blocked any view he could have had. And he bumped him, too. So that was the right call. I mean, they didn't get it right at first, but that was the right call once it was overturned. So to me, that they shouldn't have much to complain about on that one. The fumble, yes. That one, no.
Yeah, I also didn't like a couple of the roughing the passer calls in the Ticats. They felt like, I understand they're going to protect quarterbacks, so you kind of deal with it. But in the heat of the moment, it kind of ticks you off. I absolutely hated the penalty on Jeff Hughes on Sergio Castillo's missed field goal where he tackles Martez Jackson very hard. It looked brutal from where I was sitting, but it's like, can you really give a guy a penalty because he tackled you too hard? I don't know. That one kind of irked me. There was also a no yards call on the Argos pretty late in the game that I don't think was no yards. It didn't look like it to me, at least.
No, it looked like the defenders gave him 5 yards, maybe even 5 yards in a bit. That was a bad call. And the other call of roughing the passer on Adrian Tracy, yes, it was a low hit, and that's got to be a penalty, but he was pretty much thrown into him.
That's what I thought. I'm glad that's what I thought.
Yeah, and I mean, what's he supposed to do in that situation? The guy is thrown by a 300-plus pounder into the quarterback. There's nothing he can do, but I understand the call. You can't hit the quarterback low no matter what, apparently. So, you know, that's going to be called. So, you know, that's tough luck on them.
Yeah. So, basically, the reffing wasn't great in this game, but it wasn't great for either team. I don't think it played a huge role in the outcome of the game. I think that both teams did poorly enough in this game to lose it. The Argos just did more poor things more often. And that's why we're sitting here talking about a Ticats win. Speaking of that Ticats win, Mike, you were on an Argos podcast last week, and you got yourself into a little bet. Now, I sort of tweet yelled at you because I listened to the show, as I always do. I love listening to the fellow CFL podcast shows, and you were given 7 points in this game, and you turned it down like a buffoon and said, no, you know what, let's just go straight up. And I'm like, when someone gives you 7 points, you got to take 7 points. But kudos to you. You didn't need them because the Ticats won this one outright. What was the bet again? Let our listeners know what the bet was and what we can look forward to seeing in the future.
Well, it was a Twitter avatar bet, and that reminds me, I still haven't sent him the picture that I want him to use. But they wanted to do, you know, they play the Ticats song on their podcast and we play the Argo song on ours. And I just didn't want to take that bet because I wasn't that confident and I didn't want to drag you into it. You know, I made this thing on my own, so I didn't want to drag you into it. But yeah, I probably foolishly didn't take the 7 points, but I just thought, you know, that's weak. You know, you got to take it straight up if you believe in your team, which I really didn't at the time, but it turned out for the best. So pretty happy about that.
Well, good for you. Good. The guts on you to take the Ticat straight up. I will commend you for that, but in the future, man, if someone gives you points, you got to take them, okay? Please.
I will.
especially if it has to do with this show. If it's a show bet, you take those damn points.
Yeah. If it's show bet, if it has to do with the podcast, I will take the points next time.
All right, last bit of info, I guess, from this game. We got to hand out a glorious player of the week, and I'm going to give it to Brandon Banks. He has 6 catches, 98 yards, and a touchdown. He was probably the best player on this team for the majority of the game, so he gets my glorious player of the week for this game.
It's a good call because, I mean, he hasn't had a big game in a long time in returns or receiving the ball. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. He was given a big chance to show what he has, and I think he did that. So, yeah, I'm glad with that pick.
All right, so let's move on. We've done the ugly. We've done the good. Now I guess we can get into the little bit of the bad. It was outside of the whole Art Briles thing. This was a hell of a week for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. We have got a ton of news to talk about. And first and foremost, I think we got to talk about your favorite subject, Mr. Johnny Manziel. Apparently the Ticats worked him out during the bye week that they had in Buffalo. And Mike, I blame this entirely on you. This is all your fault. You brought his name up, if I'm not mistaken, last week. And like saying Beetlejuice 3 times, you summoned this from the afterlife. You casually throw his name out there, and next thing you know, it's the Ticats worked out Johnny Manziel, and I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. We're going into this. And there were conflicting reports that emerged about the team's interest in him. There was talk of too many red flags, and then that was refuted, and then it came out later that apparently he's keen on playing in the Canadian Football League. So if there's interest there, he very well could be suiting up for Tiger. Like, this could be real. Like, for the first time that we are talking about Johnny Manziel, we're not talking about him like abstract terms, like what would he do up here and how would he play and would he like to come up here. Like, we're talking about him in concrete terms, like this could actually happen. Mm-hmm. We've talked about him before, but to anyone who hasn't heard before, like, what's your take on Johnny Football? Do you think he'd do well up here? Would you welcome him on the Ticats? So what are your overall thoughts on this guy?
Well, the thing is right now, it's he's a hard person to sign after all this craziness of this last week and the bad PR. Now, Johnny Manziel is an Art Briles, I'll say that, but he does have a domestic violence charge in his record. I know that those charges were dropped after a settlement. But I think they might be a little gun-shy at this moment to bring him in just because of that. Now, my personal feelings on him, I think that he deserves a second chance. And this would be an honest second chance, in my opinion, to resurrect his professional football career. I think that he has a lot of talent, a lot of, you know, skills. He has a lot of skill set that you'd want in this league. You look at him and you can compare him to Flutie a little bit and the way he plays the game with the scrambling aspect and, you know, making plays on the go, you know, improvising. So, listen, I think that he could be successful up here if he's put in the right situation and has his head on straight, but he has to have his head on straight. If he doesn't take it seriously, like I said last week, then he will be out real quick.
Yeah.
If he thinks he's just going to come in here and be the king of the castle, then there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, my big concern, like, I'm very skeptical on if he can actually come up here and do well. And it's not because of his talent or anything like that, because you watched him dominate in college football. He went into Alabama and beat the Alabama Crimson Tide, which, if you watch American college football, you know is not easy, and he pretty much did it single-handedly. My concern is all the stuff that I read recently about him and how he, when he was in Cleveland, he wasn't really a study guy. He got by in college on his pure athletic ability. And if, like, it, this is sort of with the head on straight thing, but this is less to do with his off field activities and more to do with him as a football player. And it's just, if he's not a guy who's really studious, who gets in his playbook, I don't think he can be successful up here, no matter how much talent he has. We've seen a lot of really talented players come up here and fail. And he may be one of the most talented quarterback prospects that we've had come up here, at least when it comes to being a big name, in a very long time. But I just look at him and I see a super talented player with a guy who, if he's not committed to the game and trying to be the best he can be, it feels to me like it'd be a waste of time.
Yes, and maybe he's changed, though. I mean, I remember seeing a tweet of his that says, I was a douchebag in the last couple of years. Maybe he's got his head on straight, and maybe he will hit the books hard. You know, I mean, that's a thing that can be changed, right? is study habits, is studying of the playbook, all that stuff is a thing that can be changed and can be improved on. So it's not like his arm strength is the issue or his accuracy or whatever. It's something that can be changed pretty quickly. And, you know, we just have to wait. If he does actually come up here, you're right. He's going to have to hit the books hard because he can't just get by on his abilities, because this is professional football. It's not college anymore.
No, and there's a lot of super talented players up here, guys that have played in the National Football League, guys that have gotten second chances because of things they did that caused them to leave the NFL, or they were fringe NFL players. But even a fringe NFL player is still a damn good football player. There's some talent up here. So if he thinks he can come up here and just wing it like he did at Texas A&M, he's in for a rude awakening. But I still think if the team wants to take a shot, I don't have a problem with that. Give it a go. Nope. The worst that can happen is he comes up here and proves he can't play. Best case scenario, he comes up here and he is the second coming of Doug Flutie, or he looks like he comes up here and he does play well, and the Ticats have a young quarterback who maybe will love the CFL game because it's more suited to his skill set, and it's the lifestyle's more what he wants. It's not a 24/7 meat grinder. He's not constantly harassed by reporters and every single move is followed. Maybe he would come to Canada and go, oh, this kind of more laid back atmosphere in the CFL compared to the NFL is more to his liking, and he comes up here and he plays well. And if that's the case, like I said, the worst case scenario is they're in no worse position now with him, like without him, than they would be with him. Like that's he comes up here, he doesn't do well. Okay, let bygones be bygones. We go our separate ways. We tried it, didn't work. Best case scenario, they find a damn good quarterback, and it's a risk worth taking as far as I'm concerned. But I still have my concerns that I don't know if this is going to pan out.
I'm with you. You know, take a look, see what he can do. But the thing is, it's funny. Like, if he doesn't perform well, he'll be gone. If he performs really well, he'll be gone because the NFL will probably take another look at him. I mean, this is a guy who's in his mid or early 24, 25 years old, something like that. This isn't Vince Young coming up when he's 33, 34 years old. And I think that quarterbacks should look at this option more often. If they don't have a job in the NFL and they're in their early 20s, how else are you going to get a look? You're not going to get a look in the Arena League, I doubt. If you get some film in the CFL when you're still young, you have a chance to go back up there and make a name for yourself in the NFL. So I think it would be wise of him to take this path, to be honest.
Very true, very true. And we're only having this discussion because of the poor play at the quarterback position. And speaking of quarterbacks, we can move on to the next thing, and that is the word that came out during the week that the Ticats had discussed trading Zach Collaros. Two teams, apparently, the Riders and the Argos, emerged in trade talks. We don't know what the Riders offered or what was talked about in that, but we do know that the Argos apparently offered three Canadian players and a high draft pick for Collaros. This is a shocking turn of events. Not that Collaros is on the trade block, because he's been demoted to backup, and with his contract being the highest paid player in the league, it's not a surprise the team would look into moving him. But it's shocking in the fact that, can you believe this is happening? Like, you never would have seen this coming in May or a year or two ago. Like, this is just a complete fall from grace. And this was the guy, my brother put it best, when he signed here and they got to the Grey Cup that first year, everyone was saying, if you want to get a player jersey, you get Collaros, because he's going to be here for the next 10 years, 3 years later, and it's entirely possible and maybe even likely that he will not be a Hamilton Tiger Cat for the remainder of this season or in 2018. It's just, who would have seen this coming?
Not I. Because, I mean, 2015, we're on top of the world. We're the best. I think it's 2015, right? When he got injured?
Yep.
Yeah, so we're on top of the world. This guy is going to be our franchise quarterback for many years to come. And then just as quickly, he's on the trade block and he's not going to be a Tiger Cat anymore. So it's very strange. You know, we were both so high on him for years, and I still am high on him. I think he's still a great quarterback. I just think he's been damaged by this team, to be honest. And it's, you know, he's making, I think, from what I've heard, around $540,000 next year. That's the highest paid player in the league. So if the production isn't there and you're paying a guy that much, you're going to have to look at other options, right?
Absolutely. What do you think about that Argos offer? Three Canadian players and a high draft pick. I understand.
That's tempting.
I understand not wanting to trade him into the division. The old Green Bay Brett Favre thing where it's like, we'll let you leave, but we're not trading you to the Vikings. We don't want to play you twice a year. And I get not wanting to send him to Toronto, back to where he started in the league, getting him together with Mark Trestman. I get that, but three Canadian players, and when I hear high draft pick, I think first or second round. Anything other than that, I don't think is a high draft pick. So if we're talking three rostered Canadian players and a first, second round draft pick, I it would have been really hard for me to turn that down.
I know, it's a hell of a deal. I mean, you usually don't see high returns in trades like that for one player, and that would be a huge return and could have helped out the future of this team. But I understand that maybe they're not ready to quite give. They tested the waters. They see what was out there, and maybe they're not ready to give up on this guy yet, because just a couple years ago, he was the best quarterback in the league. So, yeah. It's very tempting, that offer, but I'm kind of glad they didn't make it, just because I think that if they let this guy go, man, he's gonna turn into that player again. He's going to burn the Ticats for the next 5 to 10 years.
He's going to Calvillo us?
He's going to Calvillo us, exactly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. We're getting to that point of the season where contracts start to become guaranteed for veterans of a certain year, and I don't know what the future holds for Zach Caleros, but it'll be interesting to see for the remainder of the season if he stays in Hamilton and going into the offseason what this team decides to do at the quarterback position, because if they decide to cut bait with Caleros, Mazzoli's a free agent. It's going to be an interesting – I think we said this last time. It's going to be an interesting offseason in Hamilton regardless of what happens. But this was a piece of news that I was surprised to come out. Another piece of news that in hindsight I don't think we should have been too surprised about was Craig Butler's decision to retire from football. Only 28 years old. Only played in the league for 7 years, but he's decided to hang up the cleats and become an assistant coach with the Ticats. It's nice to see that he's going to hang around. And I think, I don't know if you knew this, but when he announced his retirement, I learned that he played 11 games in 2015 with a partially torn ACL and was still named a league all-star. That's pretty nuts. He came in the 2014 season after winning the Grey Cup with the Riders, where they beat the Ticats. And he ends his career having played 87 games, racking up 214 defensive tackles, 42 special teams tackles, eight sacks, and 13 interceptions. It's very sad to see a player of his caliber forced to leave the game. But like I said, I'm happy he's going to stay on with the organization in some capacity. And at 28, maybe he gets himself healthy. Maybe this is a Chad Kackert-like situation. Gets himself healthy and next year can come back and play. But at least he's going to remain a Ticat. I think he's a good guy to have around. And I wish him all the luck in his future endeavors, be they with the Ticats and coaching or in anything else. He was a fun player to watch, both with Saskatchewan and with Hamilton.
Yeah, it's too bad that his career ended when he's 28, but you look at the average years that a football player has, and it's usually around 2 or 3 years, I believe. So, you know, the last 7 years, even though he was out for the last year and a half, is pretty impressive. He was a hell of a player, and if this injury didn't happen, I'm sure he would have been playing for many years to come and would have been an all-star for many years to come. So sad to see him leave, but you know, it's some players you just got to get out before you're torn up too much, right? You don't want to be hobbling around when you're in your 40s and 50s after you're done playing. So happy to see him get out when he still has his health.
For sure. And so the last bit of news to kind of poop cherry on this sewage Sunday that we had last week is the news that Ken Austin was being sued by Cornell. Now, this isn't a huge deal. It's apparently a lawsuit based around Austin leaving in 2012 to come coach the Ticats. His Cornell deal had this penalty clause in it that if he left before the deal expired, which was going to happen in 2015, then he'd have to pay presumably a $100,000 penalty, because that's, I believe, what they're being sued for. And we obviously know that Ken Austin left in the end of 2012, December 2012, to become Ticats vice president of football ops, GM, and head coach. So it's less to do about this lawsuit in general. But this past week, it just seemed like everything happened. It was just a rolling ball of dog crap that kept hitting the Ticats. And yeah, it would almost feel at one point you're thinking, what more could possibly happen off the field with this team? And it was just one thing after another. And this Ken Austin thing is just, like I said, it's the poop Sunday on top of a sewage, or poop cherry on top of a sewage Sunday. Cause this was just,
it felt
like overkill almost. Like, can you just leave us alone for one day?
It really did. And I didn't really care about the story that much, and I'm sure you didn't either. It's just, you know, it's kind of a personal thing and has nothing to do with the franchise as a whole, but you're right, it was just piling on another bad story, and I didn't really dive into this, something about a house and Bob Young bought the house or I don't know, something like that, but you know, it's not much of a concern. It's just an unfortunate incident.
Yeah, pretty much. So we won't have to say much about it. We'll just move on to the last bit of Ticat news from the week, and it has to do with the team made moves, player moves. They brought players in and let some players go, and at least this is football related and not about trading people or selling houses and getting sued or whatever it is. They signed a pair of players. They signed, we talked about earlier, I want to say Osaji Odiasi, but I'm sure I'm butchering that. Defensive back, we actually saw him play a bit in the game against the Argos on Labor Day, and they signed linebacker DJ May. And to make room for those two guys, they released a pair of offensive linemen, Jordan Swindle and Xavier Fulton. Those were the two starting tackles for this team at the start of the season. They are gone before Labor Day. I think that kind of tells you all you need to know about where the Ticats are at. But still, it was a little bit surprising to see Fulton given his walking papers. He has since signed with the Alouettes, so good for him for landing on his feet. But
oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think it was earlier today. It might have even been yesterday. But yeah, the Owls brought him in. So good for him, but just he's the biggest name, obviously, out of all these guys. He was brought in a trade at the end of last year, re-signed to a two-year deal in the offseason, gone before the midway point of the season. He was hurt and wasn't playing and didn't perform super well. Probably still the best offensive lineman the team had when he was let go, but just kind of just didn't really make a mark in Hamilton. And I wish him well with the Alouettes, but looking at how the offensive line played against the Argos, I don't think they weren't terrible, but I don't think they were that great. But it'll be interesting to see just what this team does going forward. It was still a surprise to see Fulton let go.
Yeah, and I was always pretty high on Fulton just because, you know, you bring in a veteran guy like that, and he did a decent job when he was in there from my point of view, and I was surprised at it as well. And, you know, they had that emergency guy come in, Matthews, I believe, got his first start. He was on the practice roster that day, and then all of a sudden he's the starting right tackle for this team, and I thought he did pretty well, except on one play where he missed an assignment, and Mazzoli absolutely got killed.
That was the fumble.
That was the fumble, yes.
Fumble in quotes. So it was actually an incomplete pass.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, I was surprised, and you know, hopefully this guy can, or not Matthews, or whoever they're going to get to fill in for that right tackle position, because now Tony Washington is back at his normal spot that he's played in most of his career, I believe, at left tackle. So he should be more comfortable in that position, and we're going to see who they get to bring in for right tackle, because it's going to be interesting. They'll probably have to play another rookie, I'm assuming.
Yeah, when the Ticats acquired Washington after he was cut by the Eskimos, I put out some feelers to some people I trust in Edmonton and said, hey, so what's the deal with this guy? Like, I know of him. I know he was a good player for the Eskimos. What are some thoughts on him? And the big thing I got back was great left tackle, forced to play right, and struggled. So now he's back at his natural position. Maybe he's going to perform better. I don't recall anything about him from the last game, so that's pretty good for an offensive lineman. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with the right tackle position, because you're right, Matthews came in short notice because Lamar Holmes was sick and couldn't play. So I don't know. I thought the Matthews played well, except for the one obvious play, and maybe that's the guy going forward. You let a guy play and he can show you what he can do, and I thought he was decent, so I guess that's kind of what we got to look forward to going forward.
Yep, he's a monster of a dude. I think he's 6'6" and like 320 or something. So he has the size. We just got to see if he has the talent.
Very true, very true. All right, Mike, it's been a while since we've done one of these, but you have a Bozo of the Week award to hand out. So let's get to it.
I have the Bozo. The Bozo of the Week is going to be the Winnipeg fans who were, you know, causing a ruckus in Saskatchewan. Now, not all the Winnipeg fans, obviously. There's a ton of great Bomber fans out there, the majority of them. But the guys that were, you know, apparently, allegedly spit on Daron Carter during the game and tried to decapitate Gainer the Gopher. Now, the second one is a bit funny to me, and I don't take it that seriously. But the spitting is just a It's just a gross thing to do. You don't do that to another human being, and just very unnecessary. So the bozo of the week goes to that fan for spitting on Daron Carter.
Well, the thing is, too, you spit in another man's face, like, that's go time. Like, if I'm walking down the street or I'm somewhere, yeah, you got to go, man. Someone spits in my face, they got to go.
Hepatitis, whatever.
Like, that's – I'm throwing fists. And Daron Carter goes in the stands, starts beating up fans because people are spitting in his face. He looks like the bad guy. And I want to add a little bit to this Winnipeg fan thing, because following the game, there was a lot of – I'm going to say whining. I'm going to put it bluntly. A lot of Winnipeg fans whining about the Riders faking injuries, and that cost the Riders – or that cost the Bombers the game. And it's just – yeah, you know what? Maybe the Riders were faking injuries, and that is a crappy thing to do, and I don't like it. But it's not a big deal. It's not as big a deal as it was being made out by Bomber fans. And it's not the reason they lost that football game. They lost that football game because they got their asses handed to them in the first quarter, where I believe it was, what, 24-3, maybe a few minutes into the second quarter. Like, you got run out of the stadium in the first 20 minutes, and they didn't really do much of anything until the last 10 minutes of the game. That's why Winnipeg lost this game. They lost this game because Matt Nichols kept throwing at Ed Gainey, who had two interceptions. Like, you didn't lose this game because the Riders decided to take a knee and slow down your up-tempo offense. You lost this game because the Riders just beat the tar out of you, plain and simple.
Absolutely. And, you know, it would bug me as a fan if I was a Bombers fan, because I think that's what they were trying to do. I think they planned this out and said, okay, we're going to slow down this up-tempo offense and take a knee every once in a while, we'll get the player back in three plays and, you know, whatever. But you're right, it wasn't the reason why they lost, and it was a little bit greasy. It's a little bit greasy, but it's also a little bit smart too. I mean, do whatever you can do to win without breaking the rules completely, and I think that's what they did here.
It's a loophole in the rules. If trainers come out to deal with you, you're out of the game for three plays. That's the rule. That's the rule they implemented.
You can't prove. And you can't prove that they don't have a cramp. You know what I mean? So it's just like, it'll be very interesting to see if they try this going forward with other teams.
Well, and if the standard is, well, the guy came out and then came back in the game, well, that happens to players all the time on every team. Go down with an injury and then they're out for three plays and they come back in. Like, that's to me is not proof that. Mm-hmm. The guy was faking. Like, yeah, I know there's some still images out there of one of the Rider players smirking when he was coming off the field. And I don't know. To me, that's not a smoking gun. I just feel like his whole thing was blown way out of proportion. So they get our bozo of the week. The guy who spit in Daron Carter's face is, if we can elevate someone to above bozo, they get that. But yeah, I think Winnipeg fans this week, you got to take it on the chin. You got your butts kicked on the field and kind of turned a little bit of a whiner after the game. So I love a lot of Winnipeg fans. I'm happy for them that their team's doing well, but they showed that ugly side this week, I think.
Yep, and it only takes, you know, a couple bad apples to ruin the bunch, right? So there's bad apples in every single fan base in every single sport. So just the way it is.
Oh, for sure. I got a story about the game yesterday. A couple rows in front of me, Chris Van Zyl's family, well, they were all wearing Van Zyl jerseys, and Van Zyl's from Welland. And I actually work with a woman who went to high school with him. So, but anyway, his whole family sits in front of us. A lot of opposing team players sit where I sit at Tim Hortons Field, because a lot of Argos fans around us. I believe I saw Declan Cross's family. They had hats with 38 and Cross written on the back. So I'm assuming that's his family. All these people wearing Van Zyl jerseys. Actually, Van Zyl got called for a holding call in the game, and they were like, boo. And then everyone around them started kind of chanting at them, like cheering at them. They were having a good time. And then this one idiot in the front row, and like one row in front of him, I don't know what happened, but he started beaking at them and started like getting violent with them. And then one of the Van Zyl clan stood up, and there was this thing. And it was just completely unnecessary and completely stupid. And some Ticat fans came by and were like, look, just like, let's calm this down. Like, it's just a football game. Like, I want to scream at them. Guys, it's a bloody football game. Like, just relax. You're watching football. Yeah, you cheer for opposing team, but whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. But yeah, security had to come and escort one of the guys away, and then the rain delay happened and everyone left, so none of them were there. But it was just – it's one of those things where you see this idiotic behavior and it paints you get these – the minority, which the spitter in Saskatchewan was on Daron Carter, and – this guy getting in the face of a family cheering on the team that their son, daughter, or son, nephew, or whatever plays for. Like, just come on. Like, you look like an idiot.
Yeah, and it makes us all look like idiots, because they'll come back from that game and say, oh, Ticat fans are a bunch of a-holes, right?
Yeah.
And we have that reputation, to be honest. When I was on the Argos fan cast, I was telling a story about how when I see Argos fans at Eskimos games, I always come up to them and talk to them because I want to know their story, how they became a fan, all that stuff. And I met one guy at the game and we were talking for a bit. And he's like, why are you being so nice to me? And I was like, well, I don't know. I guess I'm a nice Ticat fan. He's like, oh, usually it's not very nice treatment. But so, like I said, there's always going to be those few idiots in the fan base that makes us all look bad.
Yeah, it's funny. One of my favorite watching game stories is from I went to the Dome with a couple friends in 2009, I think it was. And we watched the Argos and Ticats. Argos ended up winning the game in overtime, I think, on a medlock. Just a medlock was still with the Argos on just a medlock field goal. But there were Argo fans sitting in front of us. And as the game wore on, we started, like, friendly chirping at each other. And we had a great time. And when the guys left and we were leaving, we kind of shook hands. It was like, it was just fun. And when you can have fun with opposing fans, like, we go on opposing – we've both been on the Edmonton podcast. I've been on a bunch of the other podcasts. You went on the Argo. Like, it's more fun when you're able to be friendly with the opposition. Yeah, you might cheer for different teams, but that's not a reason to hate someone. So I you're right. Like, you see this behavior, and it makes us all look like idiots. But one of my best fan interactions was with Argo fans. Actually, I had a great one this year where I was when I went, old man was chirping my six-year-old nephew, and they were going back and forth. Again, it's just a fun time. That's what it's about. Yeah, we cheer for opposing teams. Yeah, it sucks when your team loses. But at the end of the day, it's just a football game, and people kind of have to grow up and move on. It's not that big a deal.
No, it's all fun when you're just, going back and forth. And it's, when it gets to the point of violence or being overly mean or whatever, it's just silly. I mean, I never had that. I like Argos suck and all that. But I've never had the attitude of, oh, I hate their fans. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's a couple out there that are jack-offs. But as I said earlier, there's a couple jack-offs in every fan base. So it should be like that. It should be fun. It should be friendly. And there's no need to go over the top with it.
Absolutely. Okay, Mike, let's talk about this upcoming game. The Ticats finally win, so they're going into the game on a hot streak, a one-game winning streak. I know that's not a thing, but they've won a game, and this is the first time we ever get to say this. But they're heading to the nation's capital to take on a suddenly very hot Ottawa Red Blacks team. Ottawa's won three in a row, sit in first place in the East Division at 4-6-1, which is not a great record, but they've really turned it around and started to become the team I think a lot of people expect them to be. But I got to get on my soapbox here for a bit, and I got to talk about something about this game that's been bugging me. So Ottawa played on Thursday, and Hamilton played on Monday. And if your math is good, you'll realize that gives Ottawa four extra days of rest and preparation for this game, which is essentially a week. Like, it's not 7 days a week, I understand. But like, when it comes to prep and practice and time off, that's pretty much a full practice week that they get while the Ticats are focused on their team with the Argos. I know schedule imbalances happen with the nine-team league, and I know the Red Blacks dealt with their troubles earlier in this year. But for the Ticats to play on 4 days rest and have to travel, I think means this game's probably going to be over really, really quickly. I wouldn't care if the Ticats entered this game undefeated. Honestly, they could be 9-0 right now, and I would still pick Ottawa to win this game because I just don't think that you can play on such short rest against a team that's more rested and really play well. Like, the Ticats likely have today off as we record this on Tuesday, probably going to practice on Wednesday and Thursday, travel Friday and then play Saturday. Like, that's not enough time to prep for an opponent in professional sports. And the thing about this that I think really kind of irks me is, why did Ottawa and Montreal have to play on Thursday? I know McGill hosted a game on Saturday, but couldn't they have played this game on Sunday? We could have had two rival, like, Ottawa Montreal is, I would say, a new rivalry, but you could have had that game at like 1 o'clock. You could have had the Riders and Bomber game at 4:30. Like, I think that would have been like perfect. Like, the CFL hypes this as Labor Day weekend, but they have one of these games played on a bloody Thursday. So like, I just look at this game, and because of the rest and the prep and all that other sort of stuff, I just don't think the Ticats have a chance in this game. And I think had they either had Ottawa played this game, their game against Montreal on Sunday, or this game was going to be in Hamilton, I think there'd be something different. But I just look at this game, and we can get into offense and defense and that if you want, but I just look at this and go, the rest and prep in and of itself is going to be enough to swing this in Ottawa's favor. So anyway, that's the end of my little rant. But so, Mike, what do you think about the game?
Well, you know, I'm going to go a little bit opposite of you. I'm just going to say they played pretty well, and they want to get on the field as soon as possible. So they're going to come out, and they're going to be guns a-blazing, I'm telling you. They don't need no rest. Rest is for the weak, right? So
Ain't no rest for the wicked.
Yes, yeah, I know it's going to be tough. That's a short week like that, and every team has to deal with it essentially. So it's a quirk in the schedule, and I agree. I don't see why they couldn't have had two Sunday games, two Monday games. It's just like it's kind of weird. Thursday game comes, and then you're like, oh, no Friday night football, oh, no Saturday games, and it's kind of a long wait on Labor Day weekend to finally get to that Sunday game. So it is a bit strange. But I'm hoping that they'll just be so pumped up about that win that they'll want to get back on the field as soon as possible and keep the momentum going.
Okay. So you'll take the positive route. I'll take the negative route. And so I guess we balance each other out this week then.
Yes. But it's going to be a tough game no matter what. You know, it's going to be a tough game against a rising Ottawa team that right now is the best team in the East by a mile pretty much. So it should be interesting. It's going to be a very interesting game to watch, and the Ottawa has to be the favorite, but we'll see what happens.
If the Ticats can win this game, though, I think you're going to see a lot of narrative changes when it comes to this team, because then it's going to be, okay, they've won two in a row. They get to come back home. They play Saskatchewan. Okay, the Riders are looking good, but they've looked a lot better at home than on the road. Maybe they get the third win there. Well, then they got to go to BC. Well, BC hasn't looked that great. Well, then they're home to the Argos. Okay, well, like, if they're able to win this game, as crazy as it sounds, and again, maybe this is the post-win high, they could go on a little bit of a mini run here and get themselves back into this thing.
Right, because BC's not clicking on all cylinders. I mean, you never know. Ottawa's a good team. If they can get this win and, you know, beat another Eastern Division team, we still got a shot at this. And I know that's crazy to say. We're 1-8. And it's been a terrible first half, but I'm trying to be optimistic that we're going to put some wins together here and try to make a run at a playoff spot. I mean, we're not that far off, Josh. We're really not.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun to watch on Saturday. It's a triple header on Saturday with the games. So speaking of the other games, let's just get right into our picks, Mike. We're going a bit long here. I think the win had us jacked, and we wanted to talk more about that because we haven't talked about a lot of wins, but we are going a bit long here, and we should – probably do our best to wrap this up. So let's get right into our picks. Friday night, first game of the week, Montreal Alouettes take on the BC Lions in BC. Mike, who you got?
You got to go BC. Montreal's looked terrible the last couple weeks. Darian Durant looks like crap. It's just not a good situation right now in Montreal. So BC at home, you got to take BC, right?
Yeah, you got to take BC. They're coming off the bye, too. They lost three in a row now? They're sitting in last place in the West for a team that I believe we both had going to the Grey Cup. This is a bit of a shock. Like, we had Jennings winning the MOP. We had the Lions just rolling over everyone. Yeah, they're 5-5, so if they were in the East, they'd be in first place. But they're not. They're in the West, so they're in last. This is almost what you would say, not a must win, but this is one of those games where if the Lions lose this, you're going to really start seeing people kind of jump off that bandwagon. They really need to get this win. And Montreal has not looked good. Darian Durant has not looked good. I think the Lions win this in a bit of a walk. Saturday, the first game of our triple header is a rematch of last Sunday. This one is the Banjo Bowl. The Riders at the Bombers. Mike, who do you like in this one?
Riders are hot right now. They're arguably maybe, no, they're not as good as Calgary, but they're in that conversation of one of the best teams at the moment right now. But Winnipeg's at home. I think they're going to be eager to get that win back from last weekend. So I'm going to take the Bombers at home in front of that rowdy crowd.
Yeah, I'm taking the Bombers as well. Tough to beat the same team in back-to-back weeks. And I don't think the Bombers are as bad as they looked in Saskatchewan. I'm not entirely sure the Riders are as good as they've looked over the last two or three weeks, but they, to their credit, have strung together some wins. They're out of the basement of the West for the first time in 2.5 years. They've won three in a row, and they've looked, that offense in Saskatchewan looks really, really good. But I think the
is this the year, Josh? Is this the year that Kevin Glenn gets his ring? Is this the year?
No, because the Calgary Stampeders still exist. As good as Saskatchewan is, they won't beat Calgary. The Stamps look like they've hit their stride, and they're going to start rolling over everybody. As much as I like what Saskatchewan has done, you got to go with the Bombers at home. Just that little bit of bump, I think they're going to come in this ticked off, and they're going to get this win. But I think it's going to be a really, really good game. Second game of our Saturday triple header is the one we just previewed. Tie Cats at Red Blacks. Mike, you're Mr. Positivity on this one, so who do you got?
I'm taking those Tabbies. It may be a stupid pick. Maybe a stupid pick, but listen, I'm just I as much as I realize that the season is probably over, I just don't want it to be. I mean, we're only halfway through, and it's just not as fun when they're out of it. I watched the first half of that Labor Day game, and I just wasn't into it as much as I usually am on Labor Day. And then the second half came around, and I got into it and everything. But it's just not as fun when the Ticats aren't in it, so I'm going to take the Ticats to win.
Yeah, this is the first time since I moved back to Hamilton and became a season ticket holder where the Ticats are kind of out of it at this midway point. I came back in 2009, lived in Toronto for many years, came back in 2009, got tickets, and they kind of went on this little mini run here where they've made the playoffs every year but once. And even the year they didn't make the playoffs, they were a highly entertaining team. They were scoring 30-something points a game. Unfortunately, they were giving up 30-something more points per game, but they were at least entertaining to watch. This is the worst Hamilton team that I've had to sit through as a season ticket holder. But I got to go with Ottawa on this one. I gave you my reasons in the preview, just the rest, the prep. I've seen this play out before. I believe it was 2010. Ticats played on Labor Day. And then the Argos they played the Argos on Labor Day, and then the Owls came in, and it was like the Ticats are rolling a little bit, and then the Owls came in with Adrian McPherson starting and beat them like 27-6. It was an absolute butt kicking. I just look at this with the rest and the prep, and Ottawa is starting to look like a really good team. I gotta pick the Red Blacks in this one, as much as I don't want to, but I hope you're right, because you're right. It's not the rest of this season if the Ticats are completely out of it is not going to be as fun, and doing this show is not going to be as fun, but I can't go against what I think is going to happen. I think Ottawa is going to take this one. Last game of the week in your neck of the woods, sir, the Labor Day rematch, Calgary at Edmonton. Who do you got?
You got to take the Stampeders. Edmonton's looked not great in the last 3 weeks, and they're still kind of hurting on the injury front, so Calgary's just too good, so I'll take the Stampeders.
Yeah, I'm taking the Stamps too. Until someone knocks them off and we're wrong with a pick with the Stampeders, I'm picking with them. I know I said earlier that it's tough to beat a team twice in a row, but Calgary's Calgary. And until someone stops them, I'm going with the Stamps.
Are they going to go 61-1 again? Like, that would be weird, man, wouldn't it?
I don't think they will. I think, as crazy as this sounds, maybe Saskatchewan beats them. Maybe they went into Montreal, they lost that one. Maybe they come to Hamilton and take the foot off the gas, and the Ticats find a way to beat them. Maybe Winnipeg gets one. Hey, they went into Montreal and lost. Anything's possible. I don't know. I feel like they'll stumble at some point, but maybe they won't. Maybe they won't. I don't know. 16-1-1 would be one hell of a record, and I just feel like they'll trip up at some point. They just will.
Yeah, they will.
All right, Mike, so that's it. We end our first show of the year with a victory, which is nice. So anyone out there want to listen to the show, you can get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher. Listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. We didn't do questions this week. Show went a little long. We had one. We will get to it next week. But we didn't want to keep you for too long. So, but if you want a question, you want to send it in to us, feel free to hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am Josh_Smith_82. And you can post your questions in the comment section on 3downnation.com. So that was episode 86 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.